All right, everybody, welcome to Yeah, But Still.
Ooh.
Today we have an episode we've been trying to make happen for a while, actually. I'm very excited about this. But it's a little different. We have some guests joining us very soon. This episode is going to be focused on the now-released documentary Feels Good Man, which is a story about Matt Fury and Pepe the Frog. For those of you familiar with this, and it's a very good documentary. Brandon, you just saw it yourself.
It's a great doc, and we've got the director Arthur Jones and the subject Matt Fury, and I mean, most people I think know who Pepe is, but maybe don't know the full history,
the full story
behind it.
Yeah. He's had many lives, and I do want to stress that we have the director of the documentary Arthur Jones, but we also have Matt Fury himself, creator of Pepe the Frog.
Right.
And I think that's worth noting.
Creator of Boys Club, wherein Pepe was a character.
Certainly. I bring that up not to credit him, but to credit ourselves, really. You know, I think it's worth noting that there's been many podcasts talking about this documentary. Not many of them have actually gotten Matt Fury on the pod.
Absolutely. I mean, they're doing the rounds, they're on a pod tour, they're doing press for their doc, but you know, there's certain pods that also did a Feels Good Man episode that did not have Matt Fury. I mean, you know, I'm not gonna name names.
I'm not naming names either.
But you know, some you know, there's a certain podcast rhymes with Napo, Bap Bouse, Bap Mouse, you know?
Napo Bap Mouse, for sure. Many podcasts
didn't get Fury.
Matt was looking down the list of podcasts he could do, and he was going, nope.
Yeah. I mean,
absolutely not.
They've got the 6 digits a month, but we got Fury on the pod.
Keep that. They could keep it.
We have the respect.
That.
You guys, you can't buy
respect.
You know, respect, that's priceless.
Absolutely. You know, you could go ahead and keep that Patreon money. We'll keep our Patreon money too, much less Patreon money, but we will keep it also. We're not giving that away by any means. We're keeping the respect.
We're keeping the respect.
But, so anyway, we just wanted to, I do think you should watch this documentary 100%. I love it. I think it, like, is the only political leaning, I mean, it's kind of a political doc, it's inherently political, but it's the only one I've seen in the last 4 years that is worth watching and accurately depicts the time we've been living in in an intelligent way.
I don't think it's the only political doc of the past few years.
Name one.
Fahrenheit 11/9 is good.
Is it? Yeah, I haven't seen it. Okay, one of two then. That captures
the political climate. I think it's the first documentary I've seen that has tried to address the current moment online in a way that isn't, you know, cringe, for the lack of a better word. It's a really good, like, objective documentary. It's a really compelling tale. Matt Fury has lived a crazy life that he did not ask for.
Absolutely did not ask for.
Yeah, and so it's a very, very fascinating doc. I also recommend watching
it. So definitely go watch it before you listen if you can. If not, I'll give you the basic rundown of Pepe the Frog for all of you who are lucky enough to not completely live on the internet. In other words, normal pilled. If you're a normal pilled person, you might
Although
not know.
I
the
will
full
say, I think even the most normal pilled people, most of them know who
people
Pepe
have probably
is,
seen Pepe the Frog
peripherally.
Yeah. They probably don't know his full autobiography. But so basically, Matt Fury invented Pepe as part of the comic Boys Club, like an indie comic, and it's just a completely normal character that has nothing to do with what he's eventually become. He's a frog that lives with his friends, and he became a meme, incidentally, years later. So Pepe became a big meme that took many forms, but, you know, just a normal internet meme from like 2008 all the way until 2014. He was just like a character on the internet. It was totally fine, like just how a meme used to be. And he got big enough where in 2015, I'd say that Pepe kind of like went mainstream. And, you know, he was like kind of all over the place. He was it's sort of like left 4chan and Reddit. And then that's when like 4chan, this is still before 2016, 4chan decides like for fun, they should ruin Pepe for normies. So he starts like, they start making like Nazi versions of the memes. Basically like, you know, just your classic, you know, really cynical 4chan, like chaos prank, you know, but
right.
It was just like, oh, like Cardi B or whoever is posting this. Why don't we fucking ruin him and make him like try to make him a Nazi associated thing? Meanwhile, right. Matt Fury has asked for none of this. He still is like, this has nothing to do with his comic. And then for me, I'd say this is where it went really south. It's like it's the alt-right starts to develop and take form. But it's just like they're just on the internet. It's just a bunch of 4chan people that are calling themselves that. In fact, Brandon, I think you were the first person to really explain like the term to me. I didn't know a name for it, but back in the day, I remember you explaining this to me.
Oh, yeah.
But then I'd say this is when it went really south. Is like September 2016. It's like Hillary Clinton's like making her final efforts to swing this election. And I remember her getting on TV and doing this press conference about the alt-right, like condemning these internet people, basically. And then doing a page on her website, which included a condemnation of Pepe the Frog. And then
right.
What followed yes. is that the Anti-Defamation League labeled him a hate symbol, which to me is like, it legitimized the silliness that was taking place on the internet, you know?
Right.
And it just gives so much fuel to the people who are just trying to provoke a reaction. And then, of course, like when that happens, that's when you see like Donald Trump start using Pepe on purpose, Roger Stone, Richard Spencer. That's where it starts to like actually become embraced by people who aren't just fucking around.
Right.
Once again, Matt Fury has asked for none of this. Like
yes.
Now yeah. his character is considered a hate symbol. It's just this insane story. And Matt Fury is like the nicest, most like soft-spoken dude, like the sweetest guy, which you'll hear yeah. very soon. And he's just been on this roller coaster and does not know what to do. And
somebody made the point that when you watch the documentary, you kind of get the impression that Matt Fury is, I mean, he seems like such an angel.
Oh
right?
Yeah,
he just seems like such a like chill guy, right? You get, and somebody else made the point that when you watch Feels Good Man, it feels like Matt Fury doesn't like the Nazi Pepe memes just because it's bad vibes.
Yeah, no. Yeah, 100%.
You know? And that is I think you know, very very accurate. That's yeah, I mean, he's such a fucking angel. And
he
did
is.
Not ask for any of this.
And it's a crazy, crazy story that I can't plug this enough. I think it's really important to watch. But, you know, I highlight that moment as a turning point for me. Like, I think that's the worst. If I could remove any step from this, like, snowball effect, it would be that. Because I think that's when it actually turned bad, you know? Like,
right.
It's like, because it was set a precedent, too, on the internet, where it's like, oh, all of these people who are just individuals online just trying to cause chaos in their own small way. It was in a vacuum, but then, like, those efforts were never legitimized, you know? Like, that
right.
legitimized the efforts where it's like, oh, like, wait, we could actually do this shit? And then the rest is history. That's just, like, the new reality we live under, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, now we have to, because like after that too, then it's like, oh, we have to like treat this frog as something that we should be afraid of, you know? It's like, oh, wait,
right.
Like, wait, we have to, I have to look at Pepe and be like, oh, that's bad. That's a bad froggy. It
yeah.
just like, It really flipped everything fucking upside down. It just legitimized things that should have continued to exist in the vacuum, you know? But definitely watch the documentary. You know, we're going to bring on Matt Fury and Arthur Jones to discuss this, but we're both big fans, which is why we're, you know, we're making a point to plug this thing. So go rent this movie. It's available everywhere. We'll put a link in the description, but please rent it. This is an independent film. The networks wouldn't touch this. It's too hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fucking stupid.
It's too hot for TV.
Literally stupid, by the way.
Yeah, I mean it is such a
that encapsulates why it's stupid.
Right. Like it is crazy that none of the streaming platforms picked it up.
It kind of like it makes it a flawless movie in that sense where like even in the release of it, we're dealing with the absurdity of the Pepe, where it's like, oh no, oh we could not release the Pepe the Frog documentary.
Right.
Like it's so fucking stupid. So anyway.
No, yeah, it's a very it's a really wholesome movie.
Yeah, it's
honestly.
Great. You gotta see it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing story about Matt Fury, this comic book artist who's just like got caught up in this fucking huge mess. So 100% go watch it. I think it's an instant classic. And unless you have something else to add, Brandon, I'd say
here's our interview. Arthur Jones and Matt Fury.
Welcome to Yeah, But Still. Today we have director, creator, you told me what you wanted to be called, but you did a lot of things in this documentary. We have Arthur
director's fine. Director.
Director, okay, Arthur Jones, creator, director, animator of the film Feels Good Man, documentary specifically, and we have I'm very excited to have him. The subject of the film, Matt Fury, is joining us as well. And of course, we have my co-host Brandon right there, sitting there.
Hey, what's up?
What's up? But anyway, welcome to the podcast, guys. Me and Brandon are both fans outside of this. We love the documentary, but we're both fans of your work. Pre-controversy fans, I'd say. And the documentary, I loved it. It's finally out. I recommend everybody goes and sees it right now. And Brandon, you just watched
I would say watch it. I watched it last night. It's fresh. It's fresh in my mind, and I would recommend that everybody pause this right now, go watch it, and then loop back.
Just take a 2-hour break and come back.
Yeah.
Come back.
It's an hour and a half.
Well, if you see the film, it'll be a more interesting conversation for sure.
Right.
100%.
Yeah.
You can get into some of the making of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's probably gonna be fine if you haven't listened to it, but I think personally that you should. Listen to it. You should watch the movie first and then listen to this. Go watch it and then come back.
Fair enough. We're really excited to have you guys. Matt, how's it been going? You've been doing a lot of press. Is it chaotic or are you liking the podcast lifestyle?
I got a couple of different opinions on it. Half of me loves it, half of me is kind of not as into it, but I'm here. I'm ready to rock, and good morning, Vietnam.
I mean, I don't know, it's the fatigue you must feel right now doing like weeks of promo about like what is like kind of traumatic.
Yeah, for the few people listening right now who just straight up don't know what we're talking about, Matt Fury, you basically were used as a political football for so many years and had nothing to do with it. And I have to imagine you're completely exhausted. And then it's even weirder to probably be going on these podcasts where there's people with like a range of understanding of this complicated situation. To a certain extent, I assume that it's like now you have to explain it over again to people, you know, who maybe don't even understand it.
Well, I don't really like football and I don't really like politics, but I do listen to podcasts. So, you know, the cool thing about podcasts is you know, it's especially these days, it kind of feels like you're just hanging out with somebody. So I like, you know, I like the vibe of podcasts and I definitely like podcasts better than just talking to like a, you know, like a journalist or something like that who has kind of, they already kind of have their story and, you know, they ask me questions that kind of will fit the narrative or fit their story. And the story is usually pretty dramatic. So, you know, I try to be relatively drama free in my life, but some reason the drama just catches up with me and then I have to talk about it. But it's good to talk about stuff and it's good to get together with people and talk and heal and vibe and be friends.
Well, welcome to the fucking Good Faith Conversation Thunderdome, bitch, because this no angles here. What's a shape with no angles? That's where with that shape,
a circle.
Like a circle. Yeah, so like a circle.
Yeah. Yeah, we have no hidden agendas.
I feel like
agendas.
A circle after making this film. I've put on like 50 pounds.
I feel like we're circling the drain.
There we go.
Yeah, when did you
start? Okay, fucking when... smoking cig on pod.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yes.
Have you guys watched Ghostbusters recently?
No.
Not recently, no.
Like the original Ghostbusters, those guys are like smoking in all these scenes. It's weird.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, you don't remember it, but they're just like,
well, it was like so many movies up until, when did that even stop? I think there was a law passed eventually where it was like, oh, you can't put smoking in something that's like targeted to kids. Maybe there might be a law in that sense, or maybe it just became a complete faux pas.
Oh, was Ghostbusters just funded by Big Tobacco? I do love just how grimy Ghostbusters is, how disgusting New York looks at all.
I mean,
times.
Oh yeah,
it's great. It's so
isn't
great.
Isn't there a law that you can't have a movie where a ghost fucks you in a kid's movie?
You can get a BJ though from a ghost. That's
oh
isn't
yeah,
that
yeah,
what
yeah.
happens
oh yeah,
to
did, yeah, did he gets top from a ghost.
He gets sucked off by a ghost. Oh, we've talked about that too, haven't we? I think we talked about the question of would you let it, if it happened, would you let it keep going? You know?
Yeah, if a ghost started, yes.
Like how we wound up here so quickly into this without asking one and to see if you're...
I was like, guys, you gotta watch the movie before you listen to this conversation.
Then they
you need to... Please understand that you need to watch this film before you listen to us have this conversation.
There's probably like one or two people that paused it, bought the documentary.
Watch the film Ghostfuckers.
Watch the entire thing. Oh, yeah. You guys, by the way, if you're listening, you should also pause it to watch the film Ghostbusters to really understand the blowjob scene we're discussing. So
yeah, you gotta one through three. You gotta watch the animated series. You gotta watch Lady Ghostbusters.
You gotta watch the lady one,
and then get back to us.
Okay, yeah. So pause it. Watch the entire Ghostbusters canon.
Yeah,
dude. Speaking of smoking inside, I recently saw an item for sale on eBay that like blew my mind, which is a McDonald's ashtray. I mean, you could smoke in McDonald's. When did that stop? Like the early 90s, I think. Because I remember my grandpa used to like watch me a lot. And he would wake me up at 5 in the morning to go hang out with his World War II buddies. They would like meet up at McDonald's. So I know about this, but I only have foggy memories. But like I remember all those guys like just ripping cigs before sunrise inside of McDonald's and like eating Egg McMuffins. And it's so
I
weird.
I remember that exact ashtray. It's like a little like old looking copper disc ashtray.
Copper disc. They had a glass one too. But the idea.
Wow, classy.
It's so weird to imagine that now. In a McDonald's, like, not only can you smoke, they're providing you ashtrays that are branded with the company logo.
Yeah, once again,
but I digress.
I'm really glad that you guys paused this podcast and watched all of the documentary before coming back to this.
Okay, well, let's dive into it. I love the documentary. I think it's awesome. I know Brandon has questions. I have kind of questions, comments. I sort of just am interested in discussing all of it with you guys. To me, I think this is like the doc is a perfect artifact and representation of just how absurd things got over the last 4 years. Absurd and just completely stupid. Like, just like I've whined about this a lot, that we're living in the stupidest time culturally right now. Just absolutely everyone's losing IQ points by the day. Just being alive, and like, if you're tapped into the Matrix, you're just like losing HP, losing IQ points every second. It's like you're walking around in poison gas in a video game, just like taking damage. I saw this and I'm like, oh, this is the perfect documentary to show somebody, like, yeah, this is what happened in this era, and unless everything keeps going. But it's amazing to see just like this transition of like literally a random comic becoming a meme, and then like this extremely dumb war between like the internet and like neolibs, which I consider the kind of like the neolibs to be the real villains here, in my opinion. And then all of a sudden, like, Pepe.
Wait, that seems like a. I'm not gonna agree there.
In the context of what happened to Matt, I think so. Like, I think
in terms of it becoming what it did.
Absolutely, yeah. It was like right. A dumb internet thing. It was a dumb internet thing. Like, essentially, you know, Pepe was a huge meme for so long, which was like the cool phase of it. I'm sure for you, Matt, you're probably like, oh, neat. Like, my character is really popular all of a sudden. And when before it turned south, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You know, back when it started, it was a long time ago. You know, back in the early aughts. I don't know when Pepe became a meme. Maybe it was like, I think it peaked in like 2010, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just kind of enjoying it. It seemed kind of funny to me.
Well, it was like innocuous at the time. It wasn't attached to anything larger. You know, yeah. It was like water.
Yeah. But in terms of these days, you know, the way that I'm kind of just dealing with all of the kind of internet-based stuff is, you know, I've kind of checked out a social media and stuff like that. And I've been researching a lot of kind of like mindfulness stuff. And, you know, really, it's up to everybody individually to kind of detach themselves from this compulsion to like constantly be checking your feed or checking your Instagram or Twitter or whatever. And actually, you know, use this time that we have to ourselves, you know, during quarantine and stuff to just maybe read a book or something. Like, I just started Cosmos by Carl Sagan last night. And I'm just trying to, you know, to own my mind and not let all the chatter own it, because, you know, people like to just see what's happening and check in all the time and check in with the news. I'm watching way more news now than I ever did, and I have to stop doing that too. And just kind of create my own reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've really been promoting a healthy level of disengagement. You know, getting normal pilled.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brandon's working on that. Brandon's trying to get more normal.
You gotta kind of think bigger, you know. Think outside of your own little bubble and
yeah, fucking read a book, take a walk, like, yeah, it's not, there's no reason to, yeah, it's very bad. Very bad for your brain, and there's no reason to like wallow in that and just spend all day being like, man, this sure is bad for your brain, huh? Right, guys? You can just not fucking be on it.
Yeah.
And it feels great.
Yeah, like happiness, happiness is kind of a place, and you can tap into it. You can take some responsibility for your own happiness, and you can really just own it and tap into it and not let all this stuff get you down.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, it's good advice. I'm trying to do that as well. I've been doing a lot of projects mostly. But I mean, you like, once again, if you haven't seen the doc, you kind of got to, but I mean, it's good to hear that you're fully zenning out a bit, cuz like I was stressed on behalf of you just like watching all the shit you had to go through. And like,
yeah. Yeah, my mind goes dark sometimes when I'm thinking about that and thinking about, you know, just having just the kind of collective consciousness, kind of, you know, people's ideas about Pepe or about the internet and all this stuff just kind of take hold of you. I don't know. There's ways of dealing with it that are positive, and I don't know. Yeah, definitely getting into your own projects and your own creativity and stuff. I mean, that's how I deal with things. You know, I kind of use art as therapy for myself. So, you know, if I'm thinking about weird stuff, I like to just draw characters and situations that can kind of reflect whatever kind of negativity I'm thinking about. And it helps to kind of release me from those thoughts.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems like you had, I mean, like, Boys Club, you know, has a fan base, but it's like a very healthy level of fame. Like, it's a healthy fan base where it's like you can create this thing that people love, but, you know, it's not, nobody's bothering you. And then all of a sudden you're like accelerated into like monoculture in the worst fucking possible way that you have no control over. And, you know, that does sound like hell. And you do express that in the doc, but, you know, it sounds like you're keeping your brain very healthy right now. That sounds great.
Yeah. Like reality kind of here in California does feel kind of like hell. You know, it was snowing ash the other day. The sun is like blood red. It's insane. And then, you know, there's a mysterious disease on the loose and, all this misinformation and, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, if you try to think bigger, you know, think about geological time or think about, you know, yourself, you know, many generations from here, you know, what do you want to leave behind and what do you want to do right now to be a positive impact on yourself and others. And, you know, really, everybody can just, do their best, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Only way to win the game is to not play, baby. You know what I'm saying?
It is a game, yeah.
I mean, what was I was starting to make a point before, but I really did love this, and it's just, it really captures like how stupid things we have become, you know? Because like, and Brandon, well, you objected to it before. Oh, I'm sorry, Arthur. Did you?
Oh, no. I was just going to say, we didn't think things could get stupider. We finished the movie in January, and things definitely got a lot stupider.
Well,
I mean, I guess this is just a case study for stupid, and now we're moving into sort of like stupid 2.0.
Yeah. But, I mean,
yeah,
everything's going to keep accelerating. Our brains are too primitive for the rate of acceleration. Culture is going to keep getting so much fucking dumber. And the only solution is just fucking parachute out, just fucking like whatever you can do to just fucking parachute out of it, fucking do it. It's the only solution to like not go fucking insane.
Yeah. Well,
should we have a suicide prevention number now?
I mean,
is this sponsored by like a suicide prevention hotline? Or
yeah, we really
everyone go
have...
commit suicide, then come back and listen to
yeah,
the
we really should have. Yeah. I mean,
Matt's
yeah,
being...
we should have a link in the script.
Matt's being
for the past like 6 months.
Matt's being really positive and being like, yeah, meditation's important. I'm actually really good and happy. And Brandon's like, yeah, totally. I want to kill myself too, dude. Yeah, this fucking sucks. I hear you, man.
But, you know, he's at peace escaping the, you know, the bullshit, bro. You know that.
Yeah.
You know, me and Matt are, he's fucking, he gets it. They know.
What was I saying before? I mean, I look at the last 4 years, you know, it's like we're all the frog in the boiling pot of water, you know, culturally. Pepe the Frog in the boiling pot of water. But it's like, you know, our surroundings have just gotten so dumb. So like a pace that's really steady till we don't notice. And this doc just really does a good job of capturing it. And Brennan, I was saying that you objected before to me, like kind of blaming like neolibs. But to me, like all
yeah,
that
because there's like actual like mass shooters that were, you know.
Certainly.
Yeah, and white supremacists.
Certainly. But,
yeah,
but
so.
I think in terms of the story of Pepe, I look at it as like it was a dumb internet thing and it was legitimized by institutions who used it as a expedient political play, right? Like I look at it as like that Hillary Clinton press conference about the alt-right like gave those people more ammo than they ever could have dreamed of, you know?
Oh, of course.
And
I
then
mean, she was fumbling that ball.
And then the ADL
nonstop.
ADL calling Pepe a hate symbol. It's just like, first of all, I look at that as like, what's the fucking point of that? Like, what's that going to do? Like, what is that going to do?
Yeah, they gave them power.
And then that's when Richard Spencer and them will use it, because it's like, oh, yeah, they're going to do whatever they can to just get a rise out of people. And it's like that's when it crossed into just like the dumb cycle of the dumb snowball rolling down the mountain, where it's like, okay, now it's like in the hands of people who are just going to have a proxy war involving this frog. Like, it's so silly. And the documentary does a great job of capturing how absurd it is. And then meanwhile, Matt is like just sitting there like, dude, I didn't ask for any of this. Like, I just want to draw comics. And I don't know. I just thought the doc does a great job of that. And it's like, it's a great tool to show somebody who doesn't, like, either wasn't fully paying attention, or maybe down the road, hopefully things get better and you'll be able to show people this and be like, oh, that's what we lived through back then, that we were all fighting about frogs, you know?
Well, I mean, I hope that the movie is a step in us maybe coming to that larger cultural understanding of how the attention economy affects all of us. I mean, that certainly was the goal that, you know, as filmmakers, myself and then Giorgio Angelini, who produced the film and was really kind of, we worked in tandem making it together. That was some of our goals for sure. It's just like, how do we really document this moment that feels of the moment? It doesn't feel like preachy or moralistic or anything like that. It feels of the artistic moment that's happening right now, but also sort of stands a part of it and, you know, to the side of it.
It was pretty apolitical too. I thought it was pretty apolitical too, which I liked. You guys like kind of just told the facts and like didn't really have like a spin on it, really. You just told this story that kind of stood on its own.
That was our goal for sure. That was our goal in making it, because we didn't want to just kind of fall into this like one particular narrative that I feel like everyone comes to Matt's story already having like, oh, well, he's the guy that drew the Nazi frog. And it's like, no, we're kind of peeling that back. And we're really sort of talking about the entire system that created this unique situation. So yeah, that was certainly our goal in making it, because also we felt like we had a unique opportunity, because it is about Pepe the Frog, that people on both sides of the cultural divide would watch it and maybe have different sort of conclusions about it. And so,
yeah, I mean,
that was something we were pretty aware of when we were making it.
I was like initially wondering like, oh, how do you approach this without, you know, making Trolls double down? And you guys did a great job of just making this movie that's like just a really objective time capsule. And, you know, it's a great doc. And so, you know, there's no entry point really for, you know, there's no like soft spots for anybody to like poke at, you know, it's kind of bulletproof doc.
Yeah, that was, I mean, we had so many conversations while we were editing about that. And we had done edits that felt like it had gone one like it had slipped into one side of thinking or another story. And we would always kind of try to bring it back to this other more nuanced narrative. And then we also just kind of wanted it to have like some poetry to it. You know, I mean, I think like even people that watch the doc and maybe feel upset by something in it will still sort of recognize that the film has this other sort of artistic core to it that we hope is like deeper than just like the doom scroll of, you know, the 2015-2016 moment.
Yeah, you said parts of the doc that might make people uncomfortable. Is there anything that's like that has so far, people have, has there been anything that's like riled people up?
Well, yeah, I mean, people always want to ask us about trolling or the negative impact, but you know, the negative impact that it might reflect back on us as filmmakers or Matt, but the reality has been, it's actually like really been positive. We've gotten way more emails from people saying that the film surprised them or touched them or made them think about something slightly differently than people just randomly trolling us, you know? Certainly there's those comments you might see on Facebook or YouTube, but those are just like these public comments made by mostly anonymous people. But the contact that we've had actually has been pretty, even the people that disagree with the film they'll at least come to us with kind of like some sort of like smarter critique. And you know, I've actually, I've found some of my, it's been nice to know that some of my fears have not been confirmed about it. Like if anything, people are kind of actually really ready for this story.
Yeah.
Because everyone has been living through the deluge of information. All this shit is going past us so fast that people actually kind of want something that addresses the complicatedness of that.
Well, yeah. And I also think like the original trolls with that used Pepe are probably way moved on at that point. Like I think they've been moved on. They've moved on a long time ago. And the people who remain, one of my favorite people in the doc was like that Bitcoin guy who bought like the expensive Pepe card.
Oh my god, the fucking Pepe Cash millionaire.
For people who haven't seen it, like
the Lambo.
Yeah, what did he do?
Yeah, it's like Peter Kell.
There's
yeah.
this,
brutal.
I've never seen somebody mismatch their car more than that dude. Like I'd never really thought about it, but like he has this ridiculous Lamborghini, but he doesn't have the vibe to drive it yet. Like he does not like his shoulders are a little too tense. He's not like,
I disagree entirely.
You think he has the vibe?
Very, very comfortable. I mean, yeah, he looks like an asshole.
It didn't, he did not match his car at all. He was like, you look at him, you're like, dude, why does this guy have a Lamborghini? And then like the thing comes up like Bitcoin trader or whatever. Like it's revealed at a certain point.
Well, there's a meme in Bitcoin about Lambos.
Oh, like, for sure.
So
yeah.
He was specifically driving the Lamborghini because he wanted to appear in the film. And I think he doesn't have a Lamborghini now. I think he has a McLaren.
Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, okay. Like, yeah.
You know, like there's this meme in Bitcoin that's about like take a Lambo to the moon. Like you'll have so much Bitcoin that you'll be able to basically retire early. And that fantasy would be to take a Lamborghini to the moon, which is just like some sort of like libertarian pipe dream. Like, oh, I just want to go to this place where no humans are and have no community with all my dumb shit. And that's like, that's our dream for the future is yeah.
Yeah. That was,
let's go to the moon with a really cool car and everyone will just leave us alone. Mom's not going to knock on the door and tell me to clean up my room.
I liked that part. Cause it just kind of captured like that era of stupidity where it's like, oh, these are the people who now are like fighting over this. And like, he's buying, how much did he pay for the Pepe card? Was it?
Well, it's people always ask about that. So he paid about $40,000 USD for a JPEG of Pepe the Frog kind of mixed with Homer Simpson. But I think that's about $250,000 in Pepe Cash, which is this like niche cryptocurrency that's, you know, it's tied to Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin is sort of the gold standard of crypto. And then Pepe Cash is like this very specific niche currency. And then with Pepe Cash, you can buy Pepe memes that are put out by this group of guys who run something called the Rare Pepe Directory or the Rare Pepe Wallet. And they release series of Pepes that kind of look like Pokemon trading cards, but they're jokes, they're memes. But it's kind of also playing on this like old joke about a rare meme economy. Yeah. So they took this joke of the rare meme economy and then actually turned it into a little mini economy. And those guys all, there's an open trading floor where they have I don't know if it's on Skype or Discord or what, but they have a trading floor where they talk to each other all the time and trade their Pepe Cash.
I just lost 5 IQ points learning that.
There we go.
That was mind melting.
That man's rich, but at what cost?
At what cost? And Matt, you don't get a cut of the Pepe Cash or the Pepe coin. I mean, that seems...
I thought it was funny in the film where, like, you know, I think there's a scene of me, like, loading up T-shirts in my, like, dirty Scion, 2006 Scion, and then it cuts to the Lambo.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty smart to kind of just juxtapose the two kind of ideologies or whatever. But, I don't know. You know, to circle back to stupidity, I glean a lot of inspiration, you know, for my comics or in my own creativity from just all this stupid stuff in our culture. Like, you know, I was a big fan of Beavis and Butthead and, you know, Ren and Stimpy and stuff like that. And I remember the night of the election in 2016, instead of watching the results of the election, my lady Ayanna and I watched Mike Judge's Idiocracy.
Classic.
And then so we watched that and then woke up the next morning to the news and even got a text from a friend of ours where Pepe was like on the cover of the Weekly, and it says like, what the fuck? And it was like Pepe, like it just said what the fuck with Pepe on it. And that was totally weird.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't miss much that election night. It was probably a good decision. Although that movie is famously kind of predicted the future, so you weren't escaping that.
I think
that
we're
hard.
About to drop Mountain Dew on these wildfires.
Yeah.
In California. We're not far from it.
Yeah.
Code
I mean,
red.
That's like.
Yeah.
Oh man, Brandon, do you have a question? I've been asking a lot.
Oh well, I did want to talk about that dude John Michael Greer.
Oh, yeah.
In the documentary, fucking obsessed with this guy. Do you remember this guy, Jack?
Which one was he?
He was the you watched it like a month ago. I watched it last goddamn night.
I watched it the moment they sent me the link.
I know. I was like, this is fresh.
Yeah.
This is fucking fresh in my brain.
So what's up with this guy?
John Michael Greer, he's like an occultist / scholar.
Oh yeah, I do remember that guy. I thought
yeah, like got like a wizard beard and, you know, incredible vibe.
Oh, wasn't he like talking about like how like Pepe is like enchanted or some shit? Like
yeah, at one point he's like talking about like the habitués of the Chans.
Yeah.
It is amazing to picture him on 4chan, just as a guy who's probably in his early 60s and he's a self-made academic and occultist. He was North America's premier archdruid for a period of time. He's written over 40 books on magic. And, you know, he was someone that we had always known that we were going to have to address, like, meme magic in the film, because that's something that people online talk about so much. But we were looking for, like, a way to break that story that was actually going to be, like, really interesting and visually provocative. And Giorgio, my collaborator in the film, was on the Chris Hayes podcast and mentioned Feels Good Man briefly. And I remember when he mentioned it, I was like, God damn it, Giorgio, we're trying to keep this on the down low. But it actually worked well because he got an email from a fan of John Michael Greer's and was like, hey, there's this guy who's actually been doing some really interesting writing on his blog about Pepe the Frog. But Pepe the Frog specifically through like the lens of esoteric symbology and all this sort of stuff. So he'd written a number of blog posts, and the blog post that he'd written had like 400 comments. He has a blog called Eco Sophia. And so he had this blog post on Pepe and had over 400 comments with people talking about how Pepe is like this archetypal character and about how frogs have always meant something throughout the last 1,000 years of like sort of religious iconography or, you know, and I Googled him and he has this amazing look. And so we started talking on the phone and he's a lovely guy, but perhaps a little hard to coordinate with. And he was also like just weird. He didn't know who I was, obviously. I'm just like some random guy calling him about a Pepe the Frog documentary. But we eventually convinced him to do it. And the other reason I kind of liked him is because I felt like he kind of maybe vibed with Matt's worldview in an interesting way too. I felt like it was maybe like something in the film that you as an audience member, you have to engage your own imagination. You're like, do I buy this guy's take on this or not? Or maybe in the beginning you don't buy it, but then by the end of the film you do. But yeah, he was a wild dude. He was like, we're looking for a place to shoot him in because he didn't want us to like shoot in his home, which is understandable. But we found this library that Edgar Allan Poe used to write his poetry in New England.
Wow.
And we rented that and we did not have much money. So we used like kind of like all, we put it on the credit card. We rented this library for 10 a.m. before it opens at noon. And I call him and I'm like, hey, so call time's going to be like 9:30, whatever. And he's like, oh, no. I don't wake up until like 6 or 7 p.m.
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, you're nocturnal, right on. And so then we had to like renegotiate with the library to like shoot it at night. But it was perfect because it was like the streets were all quiet. We had this dark library. We could light it evocatively. And he was just able to like have like some real clarity as he talked. So, you know, Matt can attest, we did really long interviews for this. Like some of our interviews with Matt were like 6 hours, like the first interviews. But with John Michael Greer, I think we interviewed him for like 20 minutes and we were like, oh, okay, that's a wrap. Everything's in the movie. Like, okay, cool.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, he came in like a total pro.
He's incredible.
Matt.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. It was kind of jumping ahead in the doc, but near the end, you decide to fight back and you take InfoWars to court and you have to go through a deposition with Alex Jones's lawyers and Alex Jones gets deposed. And it's like a really, really funny part because it's like you see Alex Jones there and you see his people going after you and like they like really cannot, they're trying to rattle you, I think, and they just like really can't get a rise out of you.
You really killed that deposition.
Yeah. But I was wondering if there was any other funny anecdotes about the interactions with the Alex Jones world that didn't make it into the doc. Like, what was that like?
Well, yeah, it was funny. Like, so I was being deposed and, I had the suit and tie and everything. And he, the lawyer was just wearing like a t-shirt and had a kid with him. And I don't know. It was weird. He kind of played good cop, bad cop with me. So the first half of the deposition, he was being all nice to me. And then he just flipped on me towards the end and started to get really frustrated with me and stuff. And, you know, I could tell what they were trying to do. They were trying to like, you know, say that, you know, I rip off other art and artists in my work and, you know, how could I go and, you know, try to sue these guys for using my art if I'm doing the same thing. So, I don't know. I was just being really honest. Like, I was only answering his questions as honestly as possible. And, you know, there's that scene where he was trying to ask me where I got the name Pepe, you know, and I was just answering really honestly. I was like, well, cause it sounds like pee-pee, you know, to go pee-pee. And, you know, just did it very matter of factly. And, I don't know. It was frustrating, but thankfully they edited it together in the movie to just, show the zingers I was getting in there.
Did you,
I mean, it like that it's great when they pull up a side by side of some hamburger guy in a comic and they're like, oh, this kind of looks like the Hamburglar, and you hit him with the like, don't you mean Mayor McCheese?
Yeah. I was dying with that too.
I was running laps.
Yeah, they didn't even know the McDonald's character canon.
Yeah.
Well, just to get back to Jack's original point, yeah, it's peak stupid. Like, and we cut it, you know, it's farce. Like, that's that whole section was just farce. And, you know, in a different movie, you might have been like, oh, you're taking on the alt-right with the ominous music and stuff. Like, no, this is all farce.
Exactly.
And, yeah. And for us as filmmakers, we were like, yeah, and for us as filmmakers, we were like, all right, well, let's try to create drama. So we did cut it like, you know, Matt to Alex, and it was like a moment of conflict. So we wanted it to be like, this is like a really dumb fist fight in the middle of the movie, you know, in the parking lot. And so that's kind of how we were thinking about it in terms of like structurally placing it in the film. But yeah, Matt in that disposition is great. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think if you're like a young kid and you see it too, it's like, it's kind of inspiring. I think it's like, it's kind of like, it shows Matt not really like changing his personality for anybody, you know. It's like you can live an uncompromised life. So
I mean, I, yeah, that's important. And I think like I really do think Pepe will ride out this storm. I mean, he's been big for a long time, but like if you really think about it, this is only like a small window of time where it's been like this
in one place on earth.
Yeah, like, in one place.
Different things in different places. And like in Korea, he's totally different.
And if you think about, like, I mean, it is kind of amazing. You made an iconic character, which is, I assume, every dream of, you know, a comic book artist is to create, like, a character that, like, lives on beyond, you know, like, Mickey Mouse is still alive, you know, far beyond Walt Disney. Of course, like, Pepe took a turn, but I do think that, like, it's especially after this doc, he could come back, you know, which was your intention, but it's been controversial, but like a lot of the biggest cartoon characters have been used for really, really weird purposes. Once they get big enough, you kind of like lose control of that.
Well, yeah, Calvin was never pissing
Calvin
on anything.
Calvin's never
in the in
That's not
And that is not canon.
Not canon.
Calvin, you go through that. You go through that. Calvin and Hobbes collection, and you're gonna find a lot of Calvin and Hobbes kind of talking about life and this, that, and the other. At no point does Calvin have a piss fetish in that comment.
Absolutely not. Do you think Watterson agrees with all the stuff that he's peeing on? You know? And he's peed on everything, too. He's peed on Ford. Yeah. He's peed on Chevy. He pees on both sides.
He's peed on Christianity. He's pissed on Islam. He's
honestly, I think Calvin is the perfect political symbol because he has peed on everything.
He actually has no agenda besides pissing on concepts.
Yeah.
He does seem to genuinely love it, though.
Yeah. He loves
it. Oh, he loves it. He's smirking.
It's the only thing he's in favor of. And guys, don't forget, he also prays, because there's the other Calvin where, you've of course seen the one where he's like kneeling and like praying in front of a cross. And there's like other versions where he's like in front of a military grave, which that one's really funny to me, because it's like, The Calvin peeing is not related to the comics, and it doesn't really need to be Calvin. It could just be like a guy peeing. And it's funny that like they could have just drawn any boy praying in front of that cross for the second wave decal, but it's still Calvin. Like Calvin.
Well, that's
bowing.
That really represents the duality of life to me, because like, but like some days I'm prayer Calvin. But then when I'm feeling nasty, I'm pissed Calvin, you know what I'm talking about?
But no, we're joking, but it is kind of like, I mean, Calvin's just bigger, where it's like, you look at that stuff and it's completely ridiculous. I mean, it's Calvin's like got his dick out and he's like peeing on something. And I'm sure if if that was happening when the original comics came out, it would probably seem more offensive. But now Calvin's just so big that it's like, oh yeah, it's like, that has nothing to do with Calvin and Hobbes. It's just like, those are the stickers, you know?
I mean, that's like what completely you get. That's separated. The follow-up, you got to go back. You got to talk to Bill Watterson about piss Calvin.
Someone tried to do that.
Really?
Yeah. What's that?
Someone tried to make that doc.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah?
It's very like, there's actually a documentary now that's making fun of that documentary. the whole... I watched it just, I don't know why, but it's a very like good-natured fan film about Calvin and Hobbes. And then Bill Watterson is like the Thomas Pynchon of comics. Like no one has talked to him. No one has seen him in years and years and years. And then at the end of the movie, he's trying to get an interview with Bill Watterson, but Bill Watterson doesn't want to do it. So he like leaves like a Calvin anthology on his doorstep or something.
Oh,
it's very, it's pretty saccharine.
Yeah. It should have. I think alternate ending. He leaves the book on Bill Watterson's doorstep, right? He leaves the anthology on Bill Watterson's doorstep, right?
And then Bill Watterson.
Bill Watterson. He pisses.
There
on
we
it,
go.
And he turns around and he smirks at the camera.
That's what I was
like
hoping for.
Like the credits roll, and then there's that final shot.
Yeah,
of
that's
him coming
oh, that's
out
the
to piss on the book.
That's a post. That's actually a post credits Easter egg. Also bootleg Bart
pro
bootleg Bart was really he had some a lot of different agendas
on our
I love Rastabart is my favorite Bart.
Rastabart,
sure.
Cultural appropriation. I mean, there's Black Barts, there's I mean, we are on a podcast we recently recorded about the Iraq War with the host of Blowback. We were talking about all the pro-war Barts that were used for the various bombings of the Middle East. Yeah, there's ones where it's like, there's literally a Bart Simpson shirt where he's like coming on Saddam Hussein. like literally, what was that shirt we were talking about, Brandon? It's like Bart like coming on Saddam Hussein, which is a step way too far in my opinion to give that. I mean, pee is one thing, but semen is just a whole other layer to give Bart. I mean,
is he doing it out of like joy or degradation?
It's
I think the latter.
The latter.
We are debating that on the episode, but I mean, it's the Pepe phenomenon seems in the doc. I mean, this is like a very modern phenomenon, but you know, cartoon characters have been used for so many reasons. Like at a certain point, you know, even just like Brandon, we've talked a lot about even just like a joke or a tweet, like can lose control at a certain point. Like you completely lose.
I mean, yeah, I don't, you know, like
on a smaller scale,
there was this is nowhere near a Pepe the Frog situation, but 4 years ago, I did that fucking a little more than 4 years ago. I do want to clarify because I like to distance myself from this moment in my life. But there was a Vine wherein Danny Trejo said dicks out for Harambe. And then a week later, Milo Yiannopoulos, I made the Vine.
I was going to say, you deleted a character from this.
I was trying to pass the blame on him. I was like, yeah, I don't know. This actually happened to Danny Trejo a few years ago.
Super weird he asked me to do this. Danny Trejo asked me to be in a Vine with him.
Yeah, Danny Trejo asked me to do this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was some fucking dumb Vine. It's like, I don't know. I regret a lot of things from like at a certain point of my life. But it was a Vine wherein I was with Danny Trejo and he fucking whatever. I don't want to describe it. Describing that this shit is, you know, it feels bad. And
you invented
like
dicks out for Harambe?
Dumb as shit.
Yes.
I popularized it. It's not something I'm proud of. But I remember a week later, Milo tweeted it. And then I was like, well, this is something else entirely now.
I didn't sign up for this.
And
yeah,
I didn't sign up for this one bit. And then I kind of, you know, over the years, I've sort of reevaluated my relationship with the internet and sort of focused my priorities on other things besides posting.
Yeah.
On a side note, about Danny Trejo, I directed him years ago. I did a pilot for Adult Swim called Doble Fried, and he played a chicken nugget named Scum Nugget, and he was like the old guy at the amusement park, and he was a little chicken nugget, and he lived in a dumpster. And
that's amazing.
That
was a lot of fun.
Damn, it's real shame that. I do you have a link? A private link?
Can
I watch this?
I could send it to you.
I won't show it to anyone.
Okay.
Just I want to see it personally, please. I want to see it.
Okay.
You can trust me.
Yeah, but Danny Trejo's in it. He does a good job as Scum Nugget,
I mean, he is an angel.
He's a legend.
I will say he is an absolute angel. He is a very kind man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah, he rocks.
But yeah, that's like, I mean, Brandon, like that's that situation sucked, and that's even just like the tiniest, smallest scale, you know, which is also, I mean, basically like the internet can like take things and it you know,
it's very volatile.
Volatile.
It's so beyond your control.
But the one thing about the internet is that like it's generally okay if it's like going back and forth online in that vacuum, and especially like very niche spaces where it's just like a meme and it's going around and it's losing meaning. Being taken, but it's like what sucks to me and I think I said it before, like where I think everything actually went south is when mainstream institutions jumped in, which should never happen. Like things that are on the internet and in that vacuum belong there, you know, they shouldn't be taken out of the water, so to speak, right? Because they're not meant to live there. And when all of a sudden Hillary Clinton's on TV, like being like, I heard about the teens doing the alt-rights, and I think they should be arrested. These are bad people, and please vote for me, you know? Pepe the Frog. Like, all of a sudden, like,
yeah, they're going to double down.
Double down 100%. Because, I mean, I grew up on that shit. Like, I grew up with 4chan and stuff, and, like, pretty much the goal at all times when you're on there, you're, like, a teenager, you're like, oh, can I make any effect on the world at all? Just like see if anything will happen. And like for my era, it was like Jinkum. Like Jinkum, which was made up. Like, do you guys know what Jinkum is?
Where you get high off trash?
Yeah, but it's also like fake.
It's not trash.
No, it's poop. It's poop and like.
No, you.
But it was.
You poop in a jar and then you let it ferment.
Yeah, you let it ferment.
And first of all, I didn't know that that was. Wait, so you're saying that that was just like a joke?
Yeah, Jinkum's like a made up.
Wait, so people weren't actually...
No.
Fuck!
Yeah, okay.
No one's ever gotten
you
high
did
off
it.
Of their own
You did it.
Fuck! I'm so fucking high on Jankum right now.
You watch Feels Good, man. Last night, high on Jankum.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Non-fermented Jankum.
I will say, connections-wise, you know, me and Christopher Poole dropped out of the same school.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Did you know him at all?
I did not. I don't think we overlapped.
Wow.
But it
they're
is,
good friends. Brandon yeah,
he's impossible to get to. I tried to get to him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would have been
he will not talk to anybody.
I imagine.
You should have had Brandon plug it. They're good friends. Brandon calls him every day and says, hey, man, 4chan, like what you did with the place, and I approve of everything that goes on. But yeah.
Wait, doesn't that guy have like a big swastika tattoo?
Does he?
No. I think that is Andrew Armenhire. I think you're thinking of Weave.
Oh yeah.
That's Weave. Different. And then that's different. And Andrew Weave. England.
Oh. Yeah. Although there is like a fucking there's a Childish Gambino song that is named after Weave.
Really?
Like, off, like before he had. It's on Because the Internet.
Oh.
It's on Because the Internet, and I think it is. Oh, it's actually, the track is called Life the Biggest Troll, Life:The Biggest Troll, and then parentheses Andrew Armenhire.
Oh my God,
weird.
Which I don't think, and I love Childish Gambino, but I don't love that he has a song called Life the Biggest Troll.
Yeah, I mean, making anything about the internet pre-2016 is just not
gonna... it's a perfect album to me, but that
perfect
I like that
you're gonna go perfect.
I think Because the Internet is a perfect album.
Didn't you just say that like there's a song about a neo-Nazi type guy?
It's not about him, it's just named after him. It's before he like had a swastika.
So maybe we adjust it to.
Yeah, I mean, he was an interesting cultural figure.
Maybe it's almost an almost perfect album.
No, I think it's a perfect album.
So you think that title's perfect?
Yeah, but I don't if you want to fucking get into
Let's
the
Let's go 99%.
Like, I don't care. I don't care that it's called that. I mean, I think Life:The Biggest Troll is a bad name for anything.
You don't approve of colons in the titles of songs?
Yeah, that's his...
Yeah, it's less... I think that the song being called Life:The Biggest Troll is worse than the parenthetical name check. But I do think it is like... It's a great... It's like... I love that album so much.
Okay, we've...
Sorry to get off track.
Yeah, the classic Childish Gambino tangent. You know, they happen. What were we talking about? My God.
But you are right to go back. I mean, cartoons have always been used in weird ways. Like, I mean, like, have you ever heard of Private Snafu? It was this like black and white propaganda cartoon from World War II, mm-hmm. and it was written by Dr. Seuss.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was like Chuck Jones, Mel. It was basically all the heavy hitters of Looney Tunes were making this like war. They all met basically doing war propaganda, and then it's all been like put into the vaults because it's all, you know, xenophobic,
probably racist,
and
yeah,
absolutely, yeah. But yeah, I mean, cartoons have always been used
it's
like misinformation and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of like weird World War II propaganda cartoons that used a word that, you know, occasionally means Jewish American princess, but in a different, they said it's different.
Well, even comic books were part of like the war, like the popularization of superheroes was all about some sort of like, American exceptionalism, war fantasy.
By the way, I'm like really caught up on the fact that like you didn't want to say Jap, which is, by the way, short for Japanese. Yeah. Like it's only a slur if you're using it as a slur.
Oh, okay.
But instead of saying it, you said Jewish American princess, which is also not a nice term. Like it's not a slur, but you're
listen,
just subbing it out.
I didn't get a lot of sleep, and I've been fucking huffing. I've been huffing Jankum. So, excuse me.
But anyway, we're digressing too. I mean, Matt obviously did not make wartime propaganda. You simply made a innocent comic book that all of this just happened to you. I don't want to associate that, but I mean,
oh yeah, I didn't mean to draw a line between that. I'm just saying cartoons have always been important
certainly
to the way people.
But I have hope for Pepe. Essentially, shit. Like I think, it's undeniable that you've made something that's just like entered the zeitgeist of this decade, like, for better or for worse. And I think he's not. You technically did kill him, though. Is he permanently dead? Would you say you killed him in the comic?
Yeah, you know, I just made one comic strip for Fantagraphics put out like a free comic book day thing, and you know, I just did a six panel gag of Pepe at his funeral, and you know, that was just more for me. I was just kind of frustrated about it, and I didn't realize that it would actually, you know, become a newsworthy event. It was weird, but that definitely struck a nerve with people, and I thought it. That scene in the movie is really emotional with the Daniel Johnson song and the animation and the mood of it and everything. So, I don't know. Can you kill a comic character? You can try, but I talked about this on another podcast, but what ended up happening in a Pepe zine I made after that is Pepe was actually just dehydrated at a rave, and his buddies just give him some water and he was okay. So it was just like a fever dream thing. So I don't know.
So yeah, maybe he's, I mean, Family Guy, they killed off Brian Griffin, and you know, America wasn't having it.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, they reversed it. They fixed it. They fixed the timeline. You know, Brian Griffin can never die. Pepe can never die.
Because I think, like, after watching the doc, and I'm sure a lot of people see this, they're like, okay, like, what happened to Pepe, in a way, happened to all of us, like, where we had to just kind of, like, go through this insane time culturally for anybody involved. I really think it's, like, this has been crazy bipartisan, different ways, but just like everybody living in America the last 5 years, just things have been bonkers. And you watch it and you kind of like at the end of it, for me, I'm like, you know, like this is crazy, but I think that there's like, you know, a future for Pepe. Like for the actual Pepe comic, like I think he can weather this storm. I think everybody's weathered the storm, you know. I think like there's a very clear path out of that for Pepe. I don't think I think he was spoiled for a while by these people and like the institutions that kind of like made it official, but I think it could be undone culturally. I don't know. What do you think, Brennan?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. If that's what
you want, but
Matt chooses, but he's got other, you know. He's got other honeypots. You know, he's got that book.
Oh yeah, you do have a new
that
book
just came out.
Yeah, I got a new art book coming out called Mind Viscosity, which is basically just all my artwork over the past 15 years or so, all kind of done printed really nicely in a book by Fantagraphics that's coming out real soon that I'm really excited about. And you know, back to the Pepe thing, you know, I've always just had to double down on the fact that that nothing's really forever. You know, initially when the Pepe thing got politicized, I was just trying to downplay it in the media and saying that it's just a phase. And the truth of the matter is it is just a phase. And you know, I think Arthur's film really helped me kind of, you know, assert that and to show that, you know, things always kind of change and get new meaning, and you know, trying to cling to one symbol or another, I don't know, everything changes, right? So I think that this movie and talking with you guys, that, you know, it all helps to usher in the change and positivity, and you know, just try to just tell the story.
I mean, it was definitely, it had to have been cathartic, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the first time I really saw the final cut of it, we were at Sundance, and you know, I had a very emotional reaction to it. You know, I was crying and everything, just because it just looked so good. The animation was so good, and it just said, you know, so succinctly stuff that I had been thinking. And you know, I'm kind of too close to it, but it really did give me some hope.
Yeah, I mean, I as a viewer felt the same way too. At the end, I was like, I'm excited to see what Matt does next. I was like excited to see what art you had coming up, because like kind of at the end, it shows you drawing again. Like, I know you stopped for a while. I don't know if you have the new book coming out, but like I was like, okay, this is you know, the audience is rooting for you at the end, and I was excited not only to see like I guess where Pepe goes, because I have hope, but also just like your career. So I think like maybe at least my hope is that this is just the end does good things for you only, you know.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, it'll be like make people more interested in my artwork and stuff. So in that way, I'm very appreciative that the movie's out there, because you know Pepe, you know, people are familiar with it, but they may not be familiar with me. And you know, one of my big battles with Pepe has always kind of been that people have this ownership over him, that it's not mine, it's theirs, and that I'm just like the side note. And so what the documentary does is kind of assert my ownership of it, and you know, at least puts me in the picture,
you know,
more so. That's nice.
Also, I think you made a lot of really good decisions on how you handled all of this, because I think especially the way I've seen like famous people handle themselves, like during the Trump era, kind of like breaks people's brains in half and they start behaving very strangely. But like you stood up for yourself, but you didn't take it to an extreme where it made you seem like weird or out of your mind. You know, you didn't like lean into the Pepe thing at any point. You know, like I think there's a lot of ways where other people would have handled it in a different way that it would have been really bad. You didn't fight it too hard either. There's a lot of people who would have like freaked out.
Well, there was the save Pepe campaign. You guys do kind of talk about how that was unsuccessful initially.
Sure,
you know.
But yeah, like with the save Pepe thing, like you know, initially I was pretty upset that it was added to the hate symbol database. Those guys at the ADL never really they didn't get in touch with me beforehand or anything, but they were you know, citing my name on the hate symbols database and stuff. So I actually reached out to them, and you know, that was my harebrained idea. And I actually went out to New York City to speak at an ADL conference. And I thought that I was going to be interviewed by a journalist, and the journalist was not comfortable talking with me. So they backed out, and it was just me. And I didn't have anything written out because I thought I was going to have an interview or something. So I just walk out there like a knucklehead and just start talking about making happy Pepe memes and stuff. And I think there's a part of that in the movie, and it really shows that I'm kind of alone in this. And I'm
right.
I'm really alone up on this stage in front of a bunch of people. And I'm just, I'm just being myself. And I don't know, it's this moment of vulnerability in the film. And it was just my only way to deal with it was to just, as Arthur said before, is to just reach out to my artistic community and try to spin something positive out of something that had so much negative baggage, like in the media at the time and stuff like that. So it was kind of nice to see people's kind of positive memes. But, you know, there's also this term like toxic positivity, you know, being too overly saccharine or positive about a situation actually just makes you look like a dumbass or something. And you know, I've got like everybody, I can think really negatively and stuff, but you got to choose your battles kind of. And I choose to nurture love and kindness in myself and towards other people. And if I could do that through being creative or talking with people, you know, I'm just going to try to focus on that stuff. You know, even if it is somewhat toxic, it's still life affirming for me.
If you had something to say, go ahead, Brandon. Oh, I was just gonna say that your kindness really shines through in the movie, in a way that, like, there's points where you kind of, you're watching it and you're like, man, this guy is too kind for this cruel world.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like you come out, you're so sweet in the doc. Like there's that one part where you're like, going through this rack of clothes and you pull out like that Pepe polo and you're like, you can have a pasta meal with your family in this one, you know? And like, there's like a part where you're like, yeah, that kind of, you know, when that happened, that kind of twisted my noodles. And, you know, just a really wholesome guy in a very unwholesome world.
Well, you know? Yeah, that's thanks to the editing, I think, and thanks to you know, Arthur and I are friends, so he's uplifting me in a lot of parts of the movie. But he'll tell you, I could be dwelling in my own kind of negative thinking and my own kind of toxic insanity too. But
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I appreciate that's. How I'm depicted in the movie. It's weird seeing a movie where you're the subject in it. You know, and I don't envy Arthur's position either, because he has to go and do these podcasts and kind of speak on my behalf. And that's Arthur, you know, that can't be the easiest situation for you either, but you're doing it really well. And I appreciate Arthur kind of taking the Pepe torch and kind of relieving me of you know, just feeling kind of alone in this. And he's been really supportive. And so, Arthur, I appreciate that.
Thanks, man. That means a lot to me. Thanks.
I think you I was saying you handled it well. And that's because you just stayed the course. Like, there's two paths that like a lot of people would have gone down, and it would have been a mistake. One path is like, you know, you stuck to you. Pepe was always your comic book character. There's a lot of people that like when it became a meme early on would have been like seeing dollar signs and been like starting to sell like really bad, like leaning into the meme aspect of it too much, which would have like associated you with it. Like, you're removed from it in a sense. Like, the Matt Fury Pepe is different than the meme. And then there's a lot of people who also would have been on Twitter every single day, like responding to Donald Trump, you know, like, don't tweet the Pepe, you know, like scolding people and stuff and like losing their minds every single day from that. And you just stayed your course. And I think you handled it really well. Like, there's a lot of people would have made mistakes, you know, and made it much, much worse. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think that's a really good point. I think that's a really good point, actually, because I do think sometimes as people have watched the film who maybe are a little bit more from the political press or something, they're very quick to sort of point out like how Matt maybe didn't react in a way they would react. But this has never happened before. Matt's a guy that's pretty genuine, like, person, and he can only react the way he's going to react. And so, and this is such a unique circumstance, like, it's really not ever happened to anyone before.
Yeah.
Like, the documentary, I think, approaches it so, like, so flawlessly. And if I could praise you and simultaneously shit on somebody else, I did watch, like, there was that movie TFW No GF a couple months ago. Absolute flop.
Trash.
Absolute fucking flop.
Trash.
Fucking hated it.
It was never hot.
when I was talking with Ayana, you know, she watched the movie again when Arthur had the premieres early on. And there's a scene in the movie where I'm talking about that Fields guy or whatever he's, Wojak.
And she
was like saying, that's one of her favorite parts of the movie is when I'm describing that and I go like, what was that? Or like I say some weird words like that. But she laughed out loud at that part.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That whole thing's, I haven't seen that documentary, but yeah, Pepe as an internet phenomenon seems to be entwined with that guy too.
Well, I'll tack on Brandon's compliment and say that you guys did the impossible, which is you made a documentary about a meme that wasn't like cringe, basically. Like,
right.
Like under, which very is very hard to do.
A very hard task. Yeah. I mean, there's a part in TFW No GF where there's some guy talking about like, yeah, inside all of us is a Wojak and a Pepe. And it's like a whole fucking thing. And I really hated that scene a lot.
Yeah.
I hated that shit so much, man. I fucking hated that, well, man. But
it's made
feels
from
good,
the perspective
man.
Of those people. It's like an insider documentary, and this is like an outsider look at the meme, you know. Insider look at Matt, outsider at looking at it, the meme culture, you know. So you're not like using
the
dialogue.
Yeah, but not too outside that it's like out of touch.
No, absolutely not. It's walking the line perfectly, which is like,
which is what you got to do. That one was just sort of like, it's there's John Mouse music, and it's like, oh man, like look at these kids, these 4chan kids shooting guns, or whatever. Where you're like, I don't. Well, what's the point?
Yeah, what is this?
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, maybe the point is that there's no point. Maybe it's just sort of like, oh, where, like, this documentary is as nihilistic as these kids, but it's like, all right, well, what's the takeaway here for me?
Personally, I still don't know why you watched that documentary. I'm still confused how you even found it.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
That's a fringe one. These guys made a respectable film. Went to film festivals.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that other one did. I'm not sure.
I think that, well, that other one was going to be at South.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. There was a brief moment where, and I've not seen that film, and I'm not going to watch it because, yeah, I just feel like Wojak and that film and her film has its own lane.
I mean, to me,
and
that
I don't want to comment on the film. But yeah, there was a brief moment where it was like Pepe's Sundance and Wojak's South By. There was like this.
I mean, I would say like that movie that I talked about, you know, that other documentary. We're not here to plug.
No, we're
you know
anti-plugging.
We're here to plug yours, right?
But in terms of the universal yin yang, it does make sense. There was a Wojak and Pepe film coming out at the exact same time. That is pretty weird.
I remember when you were
the Wojak movie.
Yeah.
Is the TFW No GF to me? That's Ants, and that's Ants, right? And to me, that's Ants. But Feels Good Man is A Bug's Life.
There we go.
And you should feel good about that.
Absolutely.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. That was well put.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know, Brandon. Do you have any other questions? I mean, I'm happy to keep talking about this film, but I don't have any more specific questions. I'm still, I mean, I feel bad like bugging you about like stuff that you've probably already answered, Matt. But I have like personal curiosities, of course, about just like what you went through. I think like one thing that stuck out to me is that it was like a moment where I believe it's your friend who has like a Pepe tattoo. And it's like a moment at a pizza place where he worked. I think he might have even worked at Two Boots in Echo Park, right? Was that where he worked?
I think he was working at Comet Ping Pong.
No, but it's like a place I used to go to, and like somebody made a comment about his tattoo, saying like, oh, you know, like that's like a bad, that Pepe, that's a bad thing that you have on your arm. Is that like, was that the moment that for you where you're like, oh, maybe this is... maybe things are getting a little messed up, a little kooky. Was there another one?
Yeah, you know, I when my buddy Chris got that tattoo, it was a time of celebration. It was like, it was before before the election, obviously, and stuff. And it was like at the peak of kind of Pepe's popularity online, and everybody was, and me and my buddies were all excited about it. And we were at my friend Jay Howell's house, and everybody was getting Pepe tattoos. So Chris got one, my friend Travis got one, my friend Mel got one, and then Jay got the Land Wolf tattoo. So he was smart. yeah, it was a fun night, and you know, I was sitting there drawing Pepes and everybody's tattooing them, and then things went crazy. And so if anything, I think this film will help Chris, because he got the tattoo under his sleeve. So it's just he's wearing his heart on his sleeve. So, but Chris is very excited about the movie too. He's been posting a lot, I think, on Instagram about it. So
does he still have the tat?
He still does. Yeah, I think we were joking early on about how there's going to be a spinoff movie about his tattoo. That'll be Arthur's next project.
I think Ayana's going to direct that one.
Yeah.
I like how logged off you are now. That you were like, he was on what's it called? Instagram.
Yeah, you didn't even know what it's called.
I know. Instagram. I think it's a trap. And I've unhinged. So I'm proud.
Good
of
for
my,
you.
I'm very proud of myself.
Good
right
for
now.
You. No, I do absolutely. Think. I mean, I think. I think the future is bright for Pepe and your friend's tattoo also. I mean, I'm resistant, like, on a level of, like, outside of even my interest in your artwork or Pepe, like, hearing somebody now, like, attach the negative implications to it, you know, if I mention it, that's frustrating to me. Like, I refuse to engage in that, like that ideal or that idea where it's like, oh, he's a symbol. No, he's not, like... Like some people used it like that for a while. Like it's literally stupid, and to give it that power is like giving those people ammunition, which is what they wanted in the very first place. So it's like, I think collectively the entire world has to move on from that. And I don't know. I think like people who would like quiver at the mention of Pepe are just, it makes you look like a moron, you know, it makes you look ignorant really to be a person now.
I liked that clip of the local news anchor saying it's a Pepe photo of him wearing a mask, and he's like this guy posted a picture of the Grinch wearing a mask.
Yeah,
I liked that a lot.
4chan also loved that. They thought that what shit was hilarious. Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty hilarious. They are right to think that that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, Grinch wearing a mask.
Another kind of heartwarming anecdote about Pepe as a tattoo. At Sundance, they hired a professional tattoo artist to tattoo people at the after party. So people were literally, Arthur got one. I think Arthur got like a hamburger tattoo. So this guy just did it.
Chris and I both got hamburgers.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so they both have matching hamburger tattoos, but like a lot of the animators that were involved in the film were getting Pepe tattoos. So it just goes to show that they're so behind the idea of it that they're willing to get a tattoo of it. So that,
I mean, what was that at the end? Was that the Hong Kong protest?
Yeah, well, and actually the very ending where since at this point everyone stopped the film, watched Feels Good Man, watched Ghostbusters and parachuted out of a plane. The final bit is Pepe like going back to nature basically. And Nicole Stafford is the animator that animated that. And she was one of the people that got the Pepe tattoo at Sundance. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is a moment at the end of the film where Pepe becomes popular in the Hong Kong protests, but you know, that was something that obviously was unexpected and was like a real deus ex machina for us as filmmakers. But it just kind of goes to show that, you know, the 2015-2016 moment of Pepe in America or maybe Europe, Pepe simultaneously was extremely popular as like a reaction image in, you know, in places like Hong Kong or Taiwan or Malaysia. And so you know, the character is just kind of this like image of internet ennui, you know? And so, it means different things in different places all over the world.
Yeah. I think, I really do have hope for the future of Pepe. And I think, you know, after all is said and done, I think you've created an iconic character, which I said before is like probably I have to assume the dream of every artist, a comic book artist, to create somebody, a character that's iconic. And I mean, it definitely went through a rough patch, but I think once it evens out, it's going to be pretty good, you know? And I like people getting the tattoo is like, that's a perfect sign that it's going to, you know, maybe waters will be a little more calm after all this, you know.
Well, I have to say, like, it's been cool to see, like, we've been getting on our Instagram feed, like, people will send us Save Pepes. Like, I think the idea of Save Pepe maybe in that moment seemed naive, but in the long run, it's kind of part of this longer internet story. And, you know, and it's also interesting to just see the way Pepe is used on Twitch, which is just back to being a reaction image of people who are, like, excited or angry or think something's funny. So it's even shifted since we finished.
Yeah. I mean, he's been used for something, and it's a, you know, we've, to kind of close it off, I guess, like, we've talked a lot about cartoons have been used for all sorts of purposes over the years. I think what's unique about now is how fast things move the internet, and also the fact that this is the first time an institution has come and officially declared it, you know, during the Gulf War, we didn't have somebody being like, Bart Simpson is officially pro-bombing Iraq. Like, that is what he means. And I'm putting it on this, I'm putting it in writing that Bart Simpson is officially pro-Iraq war. The character, that's what he means. It's like, it just happened in a vacuum. And, you know, institutions didn't feel a need to comment on it. It would have been absurd. But with Pepe, they did. And, like, tried to.
Well, and they had a corporation to protect their IP.
That too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just very, very strange. It's just, like I said, the doc just showcases how strange the times we're living in are. I don't know. Any final thoughts, Brandon, before we let these guys go?
No, watch the doc, guys. It's 94% Rotten Tomatoes.
Certified fresh.
Certified, yeah, fresh.
Pretty wild. Yeah,
this is a fresh tomato, folks.
Yeah, and you know, I would also just say, you know, it would be great if people rented it. Like, none of the streaming services wanted to touch this film. Like,
that's ridiculous.
None of them did. And
that's so stupid. Like, that makes me, like, so mad.
You know, whatever. It teaches like, own. But, you know, Netflix only buys documentaries about murder and celebrities. Like, so, you know, we're releasing this, basically, Giorgio and I, the same way we started it. You know, we started making the film ourselves. We're releasing it ourselves. And so, it'll, you know, it's like $3-4. It's cheaper than most things in this life. So, I don't know. If you're curious about Matt's story, you know, watch it however you can, but it would be great if you supported us, because it really is just like artists making this thing, you know. People are always surprised when they write us that it's us responding. It's either Giorgio and I or I responding. Like, we don't have like an assistant or a media team,
yeah,
or any of that stuff, you know. So yeah, we think it's an important story, and we think it's also like we obviously believe in the film. And so yeah, just follow us on social media. Go to feelsgoodmanfilm.com. We're going to do some more screenings coming up that are with live Q&As that are going to be fun. We created our own platform called feelsgoodman.watch, where we can like host events and try to raise money for independent cinemas and bookstores affected by the pandemic. So, yeah, we're taking it out in this pandemic moment in the most artistic way we
official
can think
co-sign
of.
Please definitely watch it. It's very good. And Matt, you have a new book coming out, which I saw a little glimpse of, which looks awesome. And, I mean, when I finished the doc, the first thing I thought was like, dude, I want to buy some Matt Fury artwork. I need to get my hands on some. So also Mind Viscosity, is that the name of the book?
Yeah, Mind Viscosity. It turned out really great. It's got a puffy cover, so you can kind of squeeze it, and it kind of puffs out, and it's got like an iridescent title on there. So it's a very fun artifact. You know, part of my experience with Pepe has tempered my kind of interactions with the internet and stuff like that. So it's nice to just have a printed kind of artifact with all this artwork in it that was just either on my website or on Tumblr or whatever. So it really is the best way to kind of familiarize yourself with my fine artwork if you're interested in that.
Dude, it's gorgeous. I mean, that's the other funny for like I was familiar with your work before, but not like moderately familiar, you know, but they showed a good amount of your work in the doc, and I was watching it. It's like, you know, it's so different than just the Pepe and Boys Club. Like, some of these pieces in your book are super elaborate and, like, psychedelic. And I don't know, I'm a big fan. But the doc actually, like, sent me further down the hole of the Matt Fury art world.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah, I'm definitely interested in psychedelics and the psychedelic experience. And I think, something unique to psychedelics or having a mystical kind of perspective on things is that language doesn't really do that psychedelic experience justice. But you can speak to that through drawing. So a lot of my drawings are kind of reflective of these very kind of abstract, spirally or character cartoony based stuff that are, you know, inspired by the psychedelic experience or dreams or surrealism and stuff like that. So yeah, it's all in the book. Check it out.
Check out the book. Do you have any art for sale or any other things for sale that people can check out? Or is it just that?
Yeah, I got an Etsy site, Future Colors. It's called Future Colors. My partner Ayana runs that. And we sell a poster on there. And I've got a few like little pieces of artwork and stuff on there. So yeah, check it out. It's called Future Colors.
Awesome.
On Etsy.
Oh, dude. Final thought. Do you think you made some merch with Blake and Steak that's like famously in a storage bin somewhere that's in the documentary? Do you think it's ever going to come out or what? Or is what happened to that, all the clothes, the Pepe clothes?
I have a couple of bins of it, but I think a lot of it had to be destroyed.
Damn.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I had a couple of those shirts that were, you know, I left the box at Goodwill a few years ago just to play it safe.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is I think Matt would agree is a safe move on my part. But
they were good. Great work.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming on the pod.
Oh yeah, it's been
great.
Thanks,
guys.
Nice talking with you,
everybody. If you didn't pause it already, go put down your phone and go buy/rent Feels Good Man and check it out. Thanks for listening.
Yes, sir.